Klamer. I'm with Zacharia Lipitz. Let's have a street for Brengen. One of my observations about being a Lubavitcher is we come with a lot of baggage. And what I mean by that is that there's a lot of expectations, subtly and not so subtly, placed on a Lubavitcher that other individuals in the Jewish world don't have. I'm talking about the classic expectations that you find from and in Maimorim, the Rebbe, Yechidus, letters, Mishpiyim, the culture, which is you've got to perform, you've got to put out, you've got to go on shlichus, you've got to turn the world around, you have to bring dira b'tachtonim, you have to control your thoughts, you have to learn how to daven better. Ultimately, if you're a Lubavitcher, you just don't show up. That's not enough. The assumption behind that is you're powerful enough to be able to accomplish that. You're powerful enough to daven like a chassid, as we used to, I think people are more comfortable saying, used to daven. And you're powerful enough to control your mind and go to places that the average person doesn't go to. You're powerful enough to live the world of Chassidus. But ironically, I think the average person doesn't feel that he's powerful in his Lubavitchness and his Chabadness, and therefore there's a disharmony there, and a cognitive dissonance. Can we feel the inherent implied power that comes out of the demands and the instructions of Chassidus?
When I go to Verbrengen's and I sit and listen to the Mishpiyim and the lectures, or whatever you want to call them, talk about Hishkashris, they talk about, working on yourself, they talk about all these things, I feel always as if they're lacking an essential question, which is why?
Why? What do you mean why? Because you're supposed to.
You're supposed to, but why don't I? And when I actually think about the things of where I'm lacking, and then I have to ask the question why, it's not that I'm trying to force myself to do something in where I'm not holding. Let's just give a simple example because that sounds too abstract. But let's just say for argument's sake, I'm not doing Rambam, or I'm not doing three Prakim, or I'm not doing, a very common expectation for a Lubavitcher. You know, everybody knows what the Rebbe said about Rambam and how important it is and how is his Inyan, et cetera, et cetera. And I hear so many Mishpiyim for Breng about this, but a person who goes to that for Breng already knows that he's supposed to be doing Rambam, and he's not being asked why he isn't doing Rambam.
The for Breng, either at the front of the room or at somebody else at the table, listening to somebody, excuse the expression, pontificating about all the things we're supposed to do, which is what you're saying, and I've never been asked and treated with the respect, then maybe there's a reason why I'm not doing it. My hallucination, so to speak, is in the days of old, the Mishpia knew each person's why. They were not doing, I don't know about their why, they were doing things, but why do you think that is in our culture today?
There could be a number of reasons, but I think we could start out by saying it's easier to not. If you don't have to ask the person across the table from you at a Verbrengen why they're not holding there, but you're just telling them what they need to do, then you get to stand up after your half hour, 3 hours, 6 hour for bring in, walk away from the table and hope that something that you said stuck. Whereas when you actually propose the question of, well, why aren't you holding there, or why don't you feel like you have the ability to do that, you're opening up a Pandora's box, so to speak, of potential answers from the person sitting across from you that you then have to then address.
I think that there's a necessity to feel safe to ask why you're not doing it, because maybe the ether between the speaker and the everybody at the table is going to be shame. So that I'm not going to say why, and I'm not going to ask you why. And also, maybe there's a belief that everyone's doing it, even though, of course, that's kind of probably not true. That's why the guy's saying everyone should do it. But it takes a certain sense of vulnerability and the willingness to be vulnerable to ask everybody and then have everybody answer, or at least one or two people answer, why they aren't doing whatever it is that's being discussed. So that is, you know, we're peeling back the onion. Why don't people feel safe?
I mean, for a normal for bring in that is with someone who they don't have a relationship with. I mean, actually, I could see it as being easier on one sense because you're not going to ever see the person again, or you don't really need to have a relationship with them. But obviously, from the other side of it is if it's somebody that you have a relationship with, whether you're going to talk to them about it personally or whether you actually are going to feel judged or whether you actually think that it's your fault that you're not holding at this place, so why even go down that road? I mean, again, I've forbranged with enough people who, you know, have every excuse you can imagine on themselves, every excuse you can imagine on their upbringing, in whatever capacity, whether at school or at home. And all of these, I think, play to this idea of, you know, there were two realities that existed my entire life. There was the way that Hasidus described reality, and there was the way that I saw reality. And if those two things didn't jive, then there was a real issue whether they were going to be able to, you know, escafia it away. And obviously that's a made-up term, but what I mean by that is that, you know, if you're not doing Rambam, just force yourself to do it every single day, and then eventually you're going to come to like it, or some weird excuse that I think people have kind of assumed is the approach that you could take when you're actually sitting at a Verbrengen and telling somebody to have his kashrus to the Rebbe or to do something that the Rebbe told you to do, is that you could just, you know, you could just force yourself into the situation, see how amazing all of the brachas are that you're going to get as a result of it, and then be able to, you know, live a happily ever after life as a Lubavitcher.
Okay, I get what you're saying, but I don't understand why doesn't it occur to the culture to ask, why not? Why aren't you doing it? What's stopping you? Isn't that what the avoida is of a human being, is to get over his blocks and work through it? And isn't that when someone went into Yechidus with the Rebbe didn't lecture them on some kind of concept of following something. You came to the Rebbe with your heartfelt, true, vulnerable self and said, this is a problem for me, and the Rebbe would answer you. And I understand, we can have a simple answer and say, I'm not the Rebbe, you're not the Rebbe, but at least conceptually, we should be functioning in that level. And maybe that's why this podcast is called Street for Brangham, because it's life on the street rather than life in some kind of fairy tale land.
And yeah, I mean, of course, we could answer that. But like I said before, the person who's actually for Brangham has to then be able to actually answer that question. And it's not to insult all the people who go out to Verbrengen and, you know, try to inspire the next generation. But if they're not capable of actually answering the question or opening up that question to the floor and have the tools to be able to then deal with the answers that are going to come back, you know, that's a much more difficult situation to put yourself in versus coming in with a bunch of Reba stories, you know, hoping that one of them is going to inspire the guy that's sitting across the table from you, and then just being able to leave.
You're listening to Street for Bringin'. It's safe to say that it's not so safe out there. So just open yourself up and ask the question, why not? It's a scary thought to be vulnerable, especially amongst Hasidim. But the question is, do you wish that it was? Is it something that we should be striving for or not? Send us your answer at ChabadLife@gmail.com. You know what we're talking about? Let's bring it a little bit more closer to home. Don't we do that with our kids? In other words, the parent gets all lectury. Why aren't you doing this? We don't really want that answer, but you should be doing this, and you should be doing this, and how come you didn't do your chitas, and how come I didn't hear a Dvar Torah at the table on Shabbos, and why don't you say a Dvar Torah, and on and on and on. Why are you dressed like this? What about just ourselves? Do we ask ourselves that? Do I ask myself that? How do I collate? How do I integrate what I have just been reading in Tanya in Samech Vav? And I think, and collate it and integrate it, and I think that's what you mean by why. If you don't have a why, you're not gonna put the seed in the ground if you don't have a why.
You mentioned it before, but this is actually what Avoda is. And I think that's so important.
What do you mean?
The fact of being self-reflective and seeing where you're holding and seeing where you need to go, and being able to ask yourself the questions that we're proposing here, which is, you know, why am I not holding here? What don't I believe? What am I struggling with? And then really being able to tackle those issues is literally what literally what Avoda is. Whereas most people think of Iskafia as, you know, don't eat the chocolate chip cookie, instead of actually, you know, saying this is being presented to me, I have a desire for it, holding yourself back from doing it and asking yourself the question, do I really need this? Why do I feel a pull towards this? And what is going to be the practical way of being able to move forward so that it doesn't come up again in the same way?
You know, one of the things, Zachariah, that this all is centered in also is power. Like we said in the beginning, do you feel powerful? Do you feel that you have the ability to put investment and get, I'm sorry, put the investment and get the return? And you know what? I have found, tell me what you think about this. I have found that when I do that reflection and I do try to integrate, it's the most powerful, exciting, uplifting part of being a person, never mind a chassid, that you can have. And therefore, perhaps it's because we don't even bother to apply the question and the let's integrate this, that we feel, so many of us, as impotent.
And I think that you could see this.
Was that a yes?
Yes. Okay. No, I definitely do agree. And again, you could see this on a Nefesh HaBahamas level, like you're describing, as much as you can when it comes to these inyanim in Yiddishkeit and in Hasidishkeit. And I think it's important to note that, because a lot of people do feel powerful, you know, when they rectify something in their Nefesh HaBahamas, you know, just a worldly experience, whether it's, you know, a past, you know, issue, or whether it's something in business, or whether it's something personally that they were able to overcome. And like you said, they have that taste
of
power.
But I'm not even saying rectify. I think rectify is an end result that a lot of people get into this problem in their head that I'm supposed to. I'm talking about going out and attempting, before you even get to rectify, why that I am feeling powerful enough to make a change, even before the change happens, is already uplifting for a lot of people. Now, it's easy to go enroll in a college course and say I did that, it's easy to go and go to the gym and push yourself and do that and say, I'm going to go to the gym. You already feel great that you're going to go. So let's take one thing that we each could do, that I could do and you could do in a Hasidic context, that just applying the integration process is already powerful.
What's an example of that, Reuven? Because to me, that's very abstract. You know, there's a lot of things you could do that could be seen as an integration. Let's give some examples.
A very simple example. Any person who's honest with themselves, meaning they feel, they're feeling people, get up every morning, go to shul, and they walk out knowing that their experience was mediocre, relatively mediocre. Okay, so what's the expectation level? Is it continual mediocre? So after a while, it becomes mitzvah sanashim alamuda, and it's mediocre. Now I say to myself, I am going to... Now the question also becomes, well, I just learned something for half an hour of Hasidus, and I'm still having a mediocre experience with my davening. So there becomes a tension between what is Hasidus, how valid is it, based on the outcome that goes on, and what is the outcome when I daven. So in between, I can make a step, just like going to the gym, and I'm going to say to myself, I'm going to go to the gym, I'm now going to sit down, even if it's for 5 seconds, and I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. I don't even know what that is yet. I'm going to sit down, I'm going to put my talus over my head, and I'm going to think, maybe it's going to be Tanya Chitas. Maybe I have nothing to think, but I'm going to space that 5 seconds. If you really, sincerely do that, it'll open up doorways. I know for myself, it opens up doors.
And I hear what you're saying with that, but I still think that what we were talking about before, which is still asking the question why, is maybe still potentially missing there. Meaning like this, a lot of people have tried things, and that's why they are so frustrated, because the things that they've taken on for themselves or the things that they've tried have not been met with the expectations and results that they wanted.
Well, you know what? I'm going to turn to our audience and I'm going to ask them, have you really tried? If you're frustrated, if you feel that something in Hasidic life that you're being told is an expectation, whether it's being told by another individual, or whether it's being told by a sicha, whether it's being told by the information and the ideas that are expressed in a mimer, do you feel you tried? I think most of us have not. And that's the question we're going to leave this evening with. And we'll get back and we'll hear what the audience says till the next time on Street for Brangle. You've been listening to A Street for Brangle, a production of ChabadLife.tv and Studio 262.